Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, welcome to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of April 12th and 13th, full moon fever. Halfway through the glorious month of April. Okay, we have shad going on, we have trout going on, we have freshwater bass going on, we got pickerel going on, we got crappies going on, we have stripers and we have white perch. News, new dudes, it's been out for about a week, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. Oh, man, Great Bay, the drum are rolling. Quick report, up to the minute. Oh, man, my main man, Justin Thunder, Thino, Allen's Doctor on Route 9 in New Gretna. Thino, what's happening, man? The drum, what the drum popper, what's going on?
I'm bringing the boom, baby. I'm bringing the boom. I'm hearing the drum are out there. We got fresh surf clam in the shell. We're waiting for those guys who are brave enough to brave this weather, but... And if you do, it's going to be worth it.
Hey, the fish are wet already. He's drummer. They're like big game. Right. Okay. Ohio Avenue, Ohio Court, Iowa, whatever it is. Spot bird. So what? It's public water, public area. And Graveling Point there. A little later on, I'll get out there with the boats. But clams are critical. You have enough in stock, correct?
We do. We carry as many as we can. I mean, people beat me up pretty good for them, but we try to keep a couple here and there for everybody.
I'm hearing fish in a 40-50 pound class. A lot of
yeah,
puppies, too.
30.
They're the best eating, but yeah, at least 30. I saw one photo, legit 35 to almost 40. Nice size fish, light tackle there along the sedge banks. Great fishing, close to home right here. Stripers, plenty of stripers around, but drum, big fish close to home right there off the bank. Tide, tide. Best tide, or does this matter? Get that fresh clam out there.
Just get that fresh clam out there. Sit a while. I like top of the tide, but it doesn't necessarily matter.
Okay, Thino, before I let you go, one last thing. Tell us about the perch around. What do you got?
They're starting to finally show back up. They're mixed in with a couple catfish over here at Allen's Dock, but we're seeing some catfish. The big blue cats are running around the channel cats, and it's fun to play around at the dock.
Okay, listen, the drum are rolling. Great Bay, get to it. We're up against a break. Justin, we'll see you soon, man. Take care.
Thanks, Tommy.
Allen's Dock, Route 9, New Gretna, right there under the parkway over. Sorry about that. How'd you get that in, man?
Thanks, buddy.
See. Okay, second week of the trout stocking. Let's go. This Monday, Prosper Town and Mingo Mahone Brook are going to get stocked. Okay, these are my dozen pick for the upcoming week. On Wednesday, everything's in the njfishandwildlife.com. Wednesday the 16th, Birch Grove Park behind here, going to get 300. Greenwich Lake, 360. Grenlock Lake, 300. Heritage Park Pond right there in Episeaken, 330. Iona Lake, 330. Oak Pond, 330. Shadler Sandwash, 310. Swedesboro Lake, 410. On Thursday, the Morris River, 330. Ponder Lodge, 370. Shaw's Mill Pond, 400. And Friday, Pacon Lake is going to be at 480. Tucko Lake is going to get hit Thursday as well, 420. Just remember, Birch Grove Park and Shaw's Mill Pond have those bonus brutes. I have trout swimming around 6, 7, 8 pounds. Get to it. Up against a break. Be right back. Talking turkeys with Jimmy Sloan, Fish and Wildlife. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Today.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Hey, man, coming up pretty soon. I'm seeing some more and more birds. Gobbler season is going to open. Now you have the youth day is going to be April 19th. Period A is going to be April 21st to 25th. Period B, April 28th to May 2nd. Period C, May 5th to May 9th. I love this one. It's a tougher part of the hunt. A lot of birds gone, but it's tough. You get 2 weeks. Period D, May 12th to 16th and May 19th to 23rd. Period E is Saturdays, April 26th, May 3rd, May 10th, and May 17th. Hey, we're going to get into a little spring gobbler prospectus with DEP Fish and Wildlife Principal Biologist Jimmy Sloan. He's also the Upland Game Bird and Migratory Game Bird Project Leader. A little perspective, but they've been really embarked on this fascinating, I think, tagging hens, seeing what some are reproducing, some aren't, trying to get with other states involved, trying to get a grasp, for lack of a better word, on, it's inevitable, the decline in turkey numbers. We're going to have an update with Jimmy Sloan right now before we get to the prospectus. And also, it's been finalized, the cancellation of the fall turkey season. But Jimmy, hey, how you doing, man? Let's get to this right fit. But first, before we get going, are you ready? Are you
hey,
listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Are you ready for tuna? How'd I get that in there?
Let me catch my tog and sea bass first.
Well, excuse me. Well, Jimmy, let's go. Let the Wild Hen Research Project, It's absolutely fascinating. What are you guys finding so far? Now, it's in its second year, correct?
Yeah. We just completed our second tracking season. It's interesting to see, once you put a telemetry unit on these birds, what they're doing, how far they're going, when they're doing it, when they're nesting, how their poults are doing, where they're taking their poults. It's really amazing.
Jim, now you have a north and south zone. No central, I guess, you know, north and south. Any birds left over from, any hens left over from last year's studies? Any hens still surviving?
Yeah. So we have up north, we have 9 hens from last year that are still on air. All right, so that's 9 that we're going to get 2 breeding seasons of worth of data on them, which is huge. And down south, we have 16 females from last year.
Okay, so and how did trapping go this year?
Trapping went good. We caught 106 birds.
Whoa!
37 males, 69 females. And we put out 62 new transmitters.
Fantastic. Jimmy, what's the demarcation line between north and south?
So it's the counties. So north is Sussex, Warren, Hunterdon, Passaic, and Morris County. And down south, we have Camden, Salem, Cumberland, Atlantic, and Cape May. So Burlington, Monmouth, Mercer, and Ocean, they're out of the mix for right now.
Okay. Jim, now the purpose of this project, multifaceted project, what's it all about?
The big thing is, so there's a few here. So one is, what the heck is going on with the turkeys up in North Jersey?
Oh, man, you ain't lying.
You know, we need to figure that out. Another thing is our regulations. Are we starting the season too early? Is that possible? You know, across the range, they're figuring that some of the dates might not be lining up with in the best interest of the wild turkey.
Okay.
Another thing is disease. You know, does LPDV, does that have an effect on poult survival or nesting success or anything like that? So the big thing with this study is there's 5 other states involved. This is one of the largest wild turkey research studies that's ever happened.
Jim, did this come together because of the alarming drop in birds, or was this more of a quasi-preemptive strike on getting a handle of the situation?
So every state is starting to see a little bit of, you know, declining in harvest. Now, is that decline in hunter activity? We don't know. But one thing we know is there's pockets inside of all of these states that are involved where the birds are just not what they were in their heyday. And we're trying to figure out what that reason is.
Development's obviously a big cost, correct?
Yeah. Habitat loss is huge. And I'm always one of those biologists. I'm not going to tell you predation doesn't have an impact neither, but it sure does.
Mm-hmm. Now, when does this study conclude?
So we have 1 more year of trapping, and our transmitters should last about 18 months. So it should be right after the breeding season in 2027.
Okay, joining us on the line is Jimmy Sloan, principal biologist at DEP's Fish and Wildlife. He's also the biologist, Upland Game Bird Project and Migratory Waterfowl Project Leader. Damn, Sloan, I ran out of paper writing down your creds. Congratulations on the addition, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, Jim, last year in the spring, let's see, you had 2,321 gobblers, actually males taken, breakdown 1,890 gobblers, Jake's 431, 664 on public land, a whopping 1,657 on private land. Now, we have a lot of public land turkeys. Are there any habitat projects going on to, you know, increase, you know, turkey, turkey numbers on public land, the WAMAs, wildlife management areas primarily?
Yeah. I think this is the third year in a row where the National Wild Turkey Federation has purchased seed for brood rearing habitat in each of the 3 regions. I'm not sure on the acreage. You'll have to talk to Lou Gambale or Scott Hill on the exact acreage of that.
I don't think we're going to see Lou until the end of May. He's turkey hunting all over the world.
You'll never find him. Not this time of year. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's big. The brood rearing habitat, that's huge for us. That's where a lot of, especially in the Pine Barrens, that's where the habitat we're lacking is really that brood rearing habitat.
Jim, last year, the spring poult reproduction, poult survival, how did that pan out?
It was good. We were sitting right around 3.45 poults per hen. That's about our 5-year average.
Mm-hmm.
It looked good. We had that drought, which I know it hurt a lot of things, but it actually helped us. We did get one bad nor'easter, and it's amazing with these transmitters on the, we had 11 abandoned nests during one event.
Wow.
So it really goes to show you the timing of the weather and the rain really impacts your productivity.
Jim, the heyday of male, you know, gobbler, jake, whatever, harvest was back, what, early to mid-2000s?
Yeah, yep.
Okay,
I mean, the heyday was probably 2001, 2002, somewhere in there.
Now, we still have, what was the number? I think 36 states. We got non-residents from 36 states. And you have the number of Jersey hunters. I mean, can the flock stand that kind of pressure?
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, Tom, because, you know, we're doing these regulation changes, and you know how the game code cycle works. And
mm-hmm.
I'll be the first one to let you know, I understand we need a bag limit. There's no reason somebody should be able to kill 10 turkeys in the spring season. Now, my job is to determine what that number is. And the way I have to do that is I need data. I need science. So is it one bird? Is it two bird? Is it three bird? So that's our next endeavor. Next trapping season, we're going to start marking more males and get a harvest rate. And we should be able to tell in about 2 to 3 years, which is probably going to fit right in with the game code cycle, on what that bag limit should be for the spring season.
Well, Jimmy, still 2,300 something birds is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's a good count.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, it's very good for, you know, the state we live in. Let's put it that way.
It goes down, it goes up. Listen, even though we have a lot of public land, go in a digest. They list the acreage of public lands open to turkey hunting statewide. But, Jim, to me, it's, well, you know, my feelings on a predation there, but this development is just absolutely positively scary.
Yeah.
And even though they adapt and you see them hanging out in the suburbs, you can't hunt those. It's the shrink. Something's got to give.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you drive down any major highway, it's nothing but warehouses or solar farms, one or the other.
I'm even seeing that in southwest Jersey. What the guy we were hunting with last year, a couple years ago, yeah, that used to be, and that one thing, it's a big solar farm. Another thing, it's a monster pad site. And there's two or three, four more within probably a 10-mile swath already under construction. And that, to me, and this is in South Jersey, so that's eventually going to impact the South Jersey numbers, I dread to say.
Yeah. I mean, habitat loss is going to keep encroaching here in the great Garden State. Unfortunately.
Okay. Well, Jimmy, let's get to the prospectus for the 25 season. I'm looking at these numbers, 24, 25, 23, 24. 25 spring season rapidly approaching. Yeah, what do you think?
I think we're going to be right on pace. You know, about 2,500 males will be harvested. You know, your turkey hunting areas, your 20, your 21, they're always going to be the cream of the crop. Well, mm-hmm. hopefully not always, but currently right now, they're the cream of the crop. I'm a huge fan of 14. I love
We don't want to talk
birds.
About 14, Jimmy.
I love hunting birds in the Pine Barrens.
Yep.
It is what it is.
That's like hunting down in Ocala National Forest in Central Florida. It's just a whole different experience, man.
It is. And, I mean, another sleeper turkey hunting area where there's not a ton of public land, but if private land, if you can get in up there, is 11.
Yeah.
You know, that Mercer County swath.
Again, they're pretty much, you have your select areas in there if you can get in, but they're pretty much untouched in that zone, man.
Yeah. I mean, and they're having an increase in birds. I mean, little pockets are just booming there.
Jimmy, ratio of gobblers to jakes being taken. I mean, safe to take some jakes out of the population? Wouldn't that be seed for next year?
Well, jakes, they need to be taken out of the equation. And that's why we don't have, you know, long beard only or anything like that. You know, they add stress factors on the reproductive cycle.
Uh-huh.
And our harvest is usually 80-20, 80% adults, 20% juveniles. Our hunters, you know, if you draw a permit and you're going to harvest your one bird a year, a lot of guys, if they're self-regulating themselves, they want that tom.
Yeah, so that's the thing, self-regulate. Those are the magic words. Guy wants to be satisfied with one bird. But if it's a passion, Jim, it's an advocacy. You know, that's tough. If it's legal, guy's going to do it. Well, Jim, let's get to the elephant in the room here. Hey, yeah, we're going to address it. I'm so sad. Well, you know me, so I just love the closure. And I was at the meeting last month. The closure of the fall turkey season starting in this year, 2025. The pros, the cons. Bob Erickson he's going to be on the radio in a couple weeks. He made some good points, and he's a biologist, biologist. Your take on that? You know, the questions were flying at you, flying at me. Let's address them, Jim. Again, the one thing: hunting's regulated; it's managed a whole bit. Why the closure of the season? If the thing is only 50 birds statewide, 50 birds are being taken. Why close it? Now, my thing, Sloan, I would love that idea of split zone. No in the north, yes in the south. If it's only the average is 50 hens. What's your take? Go.
So I have two takes on this.
Uh-oh. Look out, people. Put on the head protectors.
All right. Now the argument always comes up. It's only 50 birds. What does that matter? Now, in 77, Bob Erickson and Joe Garris got 22 birds from Vermont and started the turkey population we have in the state right now. 22. So, 50 birds in a certain area where there's low numbers can do wonders, absolute wonders to the turkey population.
So close the north from, say from Trenton to Point Pleasant and let it be illegal up north and just have an open season in the south. I'm sorry, man.
That's fine. But the South Jersey birds are showing similar declines. We're just not seeing them at the rate that we're seeing them in North Jersey.
Good point. Okay.
You know, there's pockets in South Jersey where guys are like, where's my turkeys at? You know, they were so accustomed to seeing a flock of, 50 birds, and now they're down to seeing a flock of six. So it is happening. It's happening. We're trying to nip it in the butt.
Oof, yeah.
And, my second point, and Tommy, you can trademark this and put it on a bumper sticker. A dead hen does not lay eggs.
A dead man tells no tale. A dead hen lays no eggs. I think listen to me. I know I'm going to create a lot of enemies on this one. I may get that made a Rack and Fin Radio with a little Rack and Fin Radio logo on the bottom. Can I steal that from you, Sloan?
You do what you need.
Hey, no,
I mean, and that.
No, hey, you're a state employee. No royalties, man. It's all mine. My little marketing thing in there. But Jim, that is a good point. But it still comes back. Tommy P, it's only 50 beeping birds. What's this guy? What are they doing? They just. And Jim, it always comes back. It always comes back. We're never going to get that season back. Can you allay those fears, please?
Yes. I don't know if you guys know this. I'm a passionate outdoorsman. I'm a user of the resource.
He ain't lying. I love that line. He ain't lying.
I mean, for generations to come. The fall turkey season closure is not permanent. When spring harvest, when they start showing signs of population increase, I'm sure me and Bob Erickson and any other turkey guru are going to get into the room and we're going to figure out, is it how many males per square mile harvest rate? Where is that number that we can get this fall season back? I mean,
listeners, if there is a realistic possibility that it can come back, and one guy says, well, hey, Tom P, what about the bobwhites? What about the grouse? Three different species here, Song, won't you agree?
100%. Different, not totally different habitat needs, different life cycles. And we're being proactive with the wild turkey. I mean, quail season probably should have been more looked at a little earlier. Grouse season's the same way. Both of those species are severely tied to early successional habitat, which I'm not saying the turkey's not, but they're not as tied. I mean, a turkey's way more adaptable than a bobwhite.
Okay, Jimmy Sloan, before I let you go, listen, it's on the line. Jimmy Sloan, Principal Wildlife Biologist, DEP's Bureau of Wildlife Management. He is also the Upland Game and Migratory Game Bird Project Leader. Again, another, I guess, a feather in your cap, Sloan. Man, you don't have any cap space up there, bro.
Not much.
Okay, so give me your three. I'm going to hit you with this. Three wildlife management areas, South Zone, naturally. Three whammas that you think offer the best opportunity at a gobbler. Go, Sloan.
Okay, all right. Number one is Dick's Wildlife Management Area. And I hate spot burning. The guys down south are going to.
Hey, listen, that's a big ass area. Give me a break with the spot burning. You people with the spot burning. It's public land. Sorry.
Yeah.
That was my thing. That's going to be another bumper sticker. I'm going to have Jimmy Sloan's name on the bottom. No, go ahead.
Another beautiful one. If you want to see a unique habitat, is Peasley. Peasley Wildlife Management. Right?
Isn't that wonderful down there? And that's where they stock the bobs, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm even going to do a little sneaky one. I'm going to throw PeaQuest in the mix. All right. PeaQuest surprised me this year with how many birds we trapped near PeaQuest and how many birds
and
we've PeaQuest seen in
flocks up there. PeaQuest in Warren County.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. We got our land management guys up there are doing some crazy, crazy habitat management work on big enough scales that we're seeing a difference.
The guy Jimmy Hart to be involved with that?
He is involved. Yes,
and
he is.
There Antonio you McBride go. And,
yep.
Okay, yep. I got to tell you something off the air about Harvey, though. I think his son, I don't know how many boys he had. I think he and his son, Colton, are going to be turkey hunting this year. He emailed me the other day, texted me the other day. Well, Jimmy, you have a great job with the turkeys. Listeners, it looks like a good season coming up. 22,000, 2,300 in the mix there. That's what the numbers are going to be, Jimmy, for the foreseeable future. Good luck with that project, man. Keep it going and keep us updated on that.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Jimmy, you are more than welcome. You're on the docket pretty soon again, Sloan. So keep your schedule open, man. Be good. Take care.
Will do. Thanks.
Hey, wait. One more time with your slogan.
Dead hens don't lay eggs.
And there we go. See you later, Jimmy.
See you later, Tom.
I like that bumper sticker, man. I have to tweak it a little bit. Okay, up against a break. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station. Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. New York State wants to track your firearms purchases. You'll have to decide if you'd use a credit or debit card now. Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York State, signed three bills into law recently, all having to do with firearms and Second Amendment activities of New Yorkers. But one specifically now requires banks to notate if purchases are made at a retailer of firearms or firearms-related products. The new law creates merchant codes, which will be affixed to transaction records for purchases or other activity using cards at such businesses. Hochul and the bill's supporters claim it will help to curb gun violence because it will empower financial institutions to flag suspicious activity. But legal purchases by people passing background checks and having their proper New York State or city permits could potentially be flagged. And the banks remind that merchant codes don't reveal products in a given transaction. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. You're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 12th and 13th. Okay, that was turkey talk. Let's get to some striped. I got a striper bites on, a white perch bite. We know that, but this weather's been horrific. Okay, the other day was it Tuesday. I'm down there. It's a Pacon Lake. I'm Route 9. Pull over by a little Chinese, Japanese. So I started fucking casting into what? 30 to 40 mile an hour straight west winds. Got a couple little rainbows, but man, what this wind has to be impacting. I know one thing it's impacting right now is the DEP's Bureau of Marine. I'm still in the old school. Bureau of Marine Fisheries studies down there, netting and tagging studies on the Lower Delaware River for the stripers. Let's get an update on this program that started in 1989. That's when the stripers were at their, I guess pretty much a lowest ebb. Join us online right now, a very special guest, Brendan Harrison. He is a senior biologist, again, with the DEP's Bureau of Marine Fisheries. Been with the Bureau since 2014. Now, he's seen some ups and some downs. Mr. Harrison, how is it going, little brother?
Good. How you doing, Tom?
Lock, cocked, and ready to rock with this Delaware River study. It's fantastic, very interesting. This weather's got to be killing you.
Yeah. So we go out actually at the lower part of the Delaware Bay,
Delaware Bay. Okay.
This year's been tough to get out. It's definitely kept us at the dock more times than we'd like. So.
See to me, once the river gets into the bay, to me, it's all still the Delaware, you know, right there.
Yeah.
But were you guys operating out of the Reeds Beach area? Where?
Yeah,
what
exactly,
area?
Yep.
Reeds Beach.
Yep,
okay.
Wells Creek. Yep.
Yeah. So what's the tape in the past couple of years? Anything interesting? Big numbers, dwindling numbers. What's the dealio? What do you got?
Yeah, in terms of the tagging that we do down there, so we saw a pretty big decline in our catches the last, like, 10, 15 years. So we actually historically, they've always gone out and tagged in March and April, but we noticed the catches were best in the beginning. So we actually bumped things up and started tagging in February. I guess this was the third season we did that. And since we started tagging in February, we've been catching some better numbers. So last year, for example, was the highest number tagged we had since like 2011.
That's fantastic. Now, what could be the cause of that?
I think that's what everybody's trying to understand, but probably just like the warmer winters and so forth. You know, the fish are schooling up there a little bit earlier and then potentially running up to the spawning grounds a little bit earlier than they used to in the past. So, but yeah, that's what we've been finding is the earlier we get out there, the more fish we seem to catch.
Brendan, okay.
Yep.
So Brendan, so these bass are ascending the Delaware to spawn, correct? I mean, there's stripers all the way up past the water gaps. So they're making their move now, correct?
Yeah. We tag pretty much actually like a mixed stock in there. So there's some Delaware River fish, some Hudson fish, and even some Chesapeake Bay fish.
Not to be rude, but how do you differentiate?
Just from the tagging data. So they've been able to determine that the fish that are kind of schooling up and staging in there late winter, early spring tend to be a mixed stock. So, but yeah, then they head off to their spawning grounds.
Brendan, the sizes, the size classes that pretty much stay together, are they mixed? Are the bigger fish, the bigger cows, solos? What's that all about?
Yeah, so majority of the fish we tag are smaller, probably between like 23 and 29 inches. That's the vast majority. And then towards the end of the season, like end of April, we'll start to see some big breeding females that actually already spawned and are coming back down out of the river into the bay.
Well, Brent, let me ask you this. Anything, have you recovered fish that have been tagged and, you know, from all other different areas that are coming back? What's the oddest thing you found?
We actually had a fish that we tagged one April, I think it was in 2021. And then a year later, almost to the same like week, we caught it again. Same location.
Wow.
And like I said, same time of year. And then as far as the fish we tag, we've had people report them from as far north as like Maine, Thomaston, Maine.
Thomaston, Maine?
North Carolina, yep.
I know the town of Thomaston. I used to live, I was way north of that. But so, Brendan, describe this netting and tagging process, if you will, a jaw tag, a spaghetti tag. What kind of gill nets are these? Soft mesh, what?
Yes, we used floating gill nets. We drift them. They're about 600 feet long. The mesh is anywhere from like 5-inch to 6-inch square mesh. We have a live well on the boat and once we get the fish out of the net, then we'll measure them, weigh them, take a scale sample so that we can get the age of the fish back at the lab. And then we'll, it's part of a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service coastwide tagging project. So, they're red spaghetti tags that we insert into the fish.
I remember once fishing with Captain Al Cradelli down there at a sea hour. We're in the back. I caught a striper, had a yellow belly tag, like a little piece of tube.
Yeah.
And I sent it out. Yeah, and that fish came from somewhere up in Massachusetts or Connecticut or something. The hell was it? It was in October, November, back behind, it's right behind Avalon Yacht Club or whatever that is down there. What the hell was he doing down there?
I think that's what you find out from all these tagging studies is, the movements and migrations are, you know, it's not a one size fits all situation for the fish.
Now, so, Brendan, is all this data meshed with other states to come up with whatever kind of management plans that are being formulated? Again, still the 28 to 31, you know, one keeper slot in there. Where does all this data go?
Yep. So as I mentioned, it's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They maintain the tagging database. So all the states that participate from North Carolina up to Massachusetts, all the data goes goes to them, and then that gets distributed back out to the states. And yeah, it does get used for the stock assessment. So the data gets used in a whole bunch of different ways, you know, just to understand migration and growth rates and size of the stock and so forth. And then, you know, all the biological sampling that's part of it. So we, like I said, we collect the length and weight data and age data and so forth. So it gets used in a whole variety of different ways.
So the numbers improved when you went to earlier netting dates, correct?
Yep.
Okay, Brendan, listen. So Brendan, two questions before I let you go. What was the one or two biggest fish you ever caught in that surprised you where you said, holy bleep, whoa, where did this come from? Anything in a 20, 30, 40-pound class or bigger?
Yeah, the heaviest fish that we tagged was back in 2014. It was 53 pounds. So that's
Hold it. 53 pounds in a gill net in a boat in Delaware Bay with rough water. How did you guys get that thing? How did you get the scales and measurements on that? That had to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it could definitely be tough with the bigger fish, but then we take our time, revive them, and make sure they're released in good condition. So, but yeah, that's probably one of the bigger fish we've caught.
I remember once way back when, early years of Rack and Fin, Russ Allen, who was a marine fishery chief, does, hey, Tumpy, I'll get your, you got to volunteer there, I'll get your ass out on one of those boats. And he described it. I said, no, Russ, that sounds like work. And that word is not in my lexicon.
Hey,
you have a boat down here at Smokies, right in Reeves Beach, on 47.
Yeah.
I'll hang there with my Cool Miller Lite, my sandwich. I'll watch you guys. But Brent, on a serious note, people look out for the tags. Where do they send them if they get a tagged fish? What you got?
Yeah, so they're red, pink looking tags. Just keep an eye out for them in the belly region. And they have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service number on them. So if you can read the number without removing the tag, that's great. And just call it in, report it with the, you know, location that you caught it and the size of the fish. And if you have to cut it off, that's okay too. So, but yeah, the phone number is right on the tag itself.
On the line, Brendan Harrison, DEP's Marine Fisheries principal biologist. We're talking the striper tagging down there. I was saying the Lower Delaware Bay there at a Reed's Beach. When I was with fisheries 100,000 years ago, like doing the electroshocking or whatever and the gill lining, that type of science was fascinating to me, man. Like,
yeah,
you see, that's just a lot. And again, when you have migratory fish like that, it just, you'd be surprised where some of these fish go and come back and survive. Another thing with the Gray's research, where they found stripers offshore, it was always thought the north-south migration, Hutch at the fish, but they'll pass. We found them way out with these satellite readings. So that's absolutely great work you're doing, man.
Yeah, thanks. No, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on today.
Brendan, you take a question, man. When are you going to get the fish, bro?
What's that?
When are you going to get the fish?
I got a little one at home now, so it's a little tougher at times, but I usually try to get out in the spring and the fall to see some fishing from the beach. So,
hey, Brendan, you take care. Thanks again, man.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah, it's striper netting. That is fascinating, man, you get down there. Anything like, and Jimmy Sloan with that project going on with the getting data, getting his research, it seems to just take long to play out to get results. And then things are in a constant state of flux. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. For complete contest rules, visit WPGTalkRadio.com.
Fox News, I'm Deborah Valentine. A federal judge ordering the Trump administration to lift their freeze on federal funding to Maine, frozen due to Maine's alleged failure to comply with Title IX, prohibiting sex discrimination in educational programs and activities. More from Fox's Jill Nato.
The judge in this newest ruling has said the order means the Ag Department cannot terminate, freeze, or otherwise block the state's access to federal funds.
The state has not complied with President Trump's executive order banning men from competing in women's sports. A Los Angeles judge allowing a resentencing hearing for the Menendez brothers to move forward, their cousin Anna Maria Baralt.
Today's ruling affirms something that should never have been in question. The facts, fairness, and the law still matter.
The Menendez brothers, Eric and Lyle, are serving life in prison without parole after being convicted in the 1989 murder of their parents. America's listening to Fox News. Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, a little bit chilly outside. You might want to bring that coat with you and even your umbrella as well, as we could see some rain showers in the area with breezy conditions with a high of 44. For tomorrow, we're looking at drizzle in the morning. Otherwise, it's going to start to warm up with low clouds and then turning breezy in the afternoon and then some sunshine as well with a high of 59. And then on Monday, we're looking real good with periods of clouds and sun with a high of 66. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 12th and 13th already. Hey, just a reminder, the Governor's Surf Fishing Tournament will be held May 18th. How apropos is that with Brendan just on? It's going to be at Island Beach State Park, the family-friendly tournament, awards prizes in age, species, and gender categories. Register for the tournament before April 19th and save on adult next weekend, man. I just started to read this back in February, believe it? Save on adult registration, be eligible for additional prizes, and head directly to the beach on a day of the tournament instead of having to stop at that pavilion and all that good stuff. Well, we had Jimmy Sloan on earlier talking turkeys in the beginning of this broadcast. Now let's switch back to the Game Birds AKA, breaking news, the AKA, the pheasants and the Bob Whites, the revamped stocking program, I guess, proposed, voted on, whatever. And some reductions, not as drastic as you're hearing. People with the internet, stop up, clear your heads here, man. Get it down. Joining us, very special guest on the Rack and Fin line right now. It is Dave Golden. He is the Assistant Commissioner of Fish and Wildlife with New Jersey's DEP. Great outdoorsman and of itself, and otherwise, a really cool guy. We're talking about the reductions in the pheasant and in the Bob White stocking. So, Dave, I know it was a lot of interest in that. Pretty crowded room down there at the Assinpink hearing, was it not?
It sure was, Tom. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we had a meeting on Tuesday, Fish and Game Council meeting, to talk about the change in the pheasant schedule for this year. And as you mentioned, very well attended. There was a lot of buildup to it. We did a survey back in February to get some information from our stamp buyers about how they'd like to see the program modified. And even ahead of that, we had a meeting with the council, I think it was towards the end of 2024, on pheasant reduction. So this is a conversation that's been brewing for quite some time. And as of Tuesday, we made a decision on where we're headed with the pheasant.
Well, Dave, and I've said this for years, saying, man, when is this like birthday cake ride gonna stop? Because we have been spoiled, Dave, the past, what, 7-8 years, astronomical number of pheasants and bobs being stocked, management areas up and down the state. There was some tweaking a few years ago, seems fine with it. And I said, but the bird stamp price, $40, hasn't gone up. The price of feed goes up, the price of the birds goes up. How long before something had to give? And it looks like it's come around, Dave.
Yeah, our staff has done a great job keeping this program successful, even given the fact that the stamp hasn't gone up since 2000. So it's been 25 years and prices continue to rise. But our staff has really done a good job to put together a program that, you know, you're getting tons of pheasants for the price. It's great. And we've been really, like you said, for the past 7 or so years, upwards of 60,000 birds per year for a $40 stamp. That's great. The change that we're making this year is we're dropping that number down to 47,100. So it's still a great number of birds, but it is a reduction from what people have gotten used to over the previous years. So the question ahead of the council, and even in the survey to our constituents, was how do you want to spread out this reduction? And so in our survey, we gave three options. First option would be just evenly distribute the reduced number of birds across all the WAMAs that are stocked and all the days that are stocked. So that was option one. Option two, reduce the number of stocking days from 15 to 12. But keep the number of birds the same on each of those stocking days, but you'd have fewer stocking days. And then the third option, and the option that got the most votes in the survey, and ultimately the option that the council voted on and approved, was to remove midweek stocking on some of our wildlife management areas. And so 45% of the people in the survey selected that, and that's the recommendation that we put in front of the council, which they then ahead they went ahead and voted on.
Now, Dave, was it both Tuesday and Thursday, just Thursday, or again, Tuesday and Thursday?
Yeah, it would be Tuesday and Thursday on certain WAMAs, so you'd still have that Saturday stocking. Now, I should say that we're still stocking the Thursday for Thanksgiving on all WAMAs.
I was just going to say, Golden, you missed that one, boy.
I'd never take away Thanksgiving.
There would have been pitchforks out there, brother.
So, yeah, we'll still stock on Thanksgiving on all WAMAs, and we'll still stock on that last Tuesday of the season on all wildlife management areas, and that'll, you know, carry some extra birds into the into the new year after the stocking's over.
Well, Dave, the wildlife management areas chosen equally apportioned north, central, and south. Was it predicated on size, predicated on perceived pressure, real pressure? What's the dealio?
Yeah, it's a mix. I mean, we try to be equal among the three different regions the best we can. So in the north, the WAMAs that won't be stocked midweek are Berkshire Valley, Walpack, and Delaware Water Gap. We've got some access issues at the gap, so we've decided to include that. Central, you're looking at Greenwood, Manasquan, and Medford Wildlife Management Area. And then in the south, you're looking at Heislerville, Mad Horse, Nantucket, and Port Republic. So those would be the wildlife management areas and that federal property that won't get those midweek stocking.
And Dave, well, listen, speaking with Dave Golden, he is the New Jersey DEP Assistant Commissioner of Fish and Wildlife. We're talking about the reduction in pheasant. We're going to get to the quail in a second. But when you think, Dave, and I said this before, and I'm, you know, hey, I'm there to stretch the dollar wherever I can. But when you go to a preserve, you're spending now last year, 27, 28, up to $30 for a cockbird, 20-something for a hen? And you say, whoa, you know, and oh, but it's a quality hunt. Well, you'll go there one time, that's fine. But you want to take home, you know, two pheasants, you just spent $40. You get a $40 pheasant stamp, and you pick your times. You have quality hunts on state land. I have some, I don't say issues, I have some problems with the state land sometimes, but it was at the $40, Dave, it was a win-win-win. Just to play devil's advocate, Golden, price adjustment, inflation over here, since they last raised the price of a pheasant stamp, what would it cost today?
Yeah, great question. So we actually ran an analysis on that. So if you think about the last price increase up to $40 for the pheasant and quail stamp, that was in the year 2000. So if you would adjust that for inflation over the past 25 years, you're looking at a pheasant stamp that ought to be priced upwards of $75. And so that's where inflation would get you. And the importance there is, as you already pointed out, the cost of birds and feeding birds, buying birds, feeding birds, everything that goes into this pheasant program continues to go up, but the revenue is flat at best.
Yeah. Okay, now, Dave, let's get to my fave. I love my ringnecks. I just can't hit them. Okay? I acknowledge. I just can't hit them. I like eating them, though. The bobwhites, Dave. 11,000 on two wildlife managers, Peasley, and Greenwood. Have those numbers been reduced?
Yeah, we did actually reduce the numbers of birds there. That was voted on, like I said, towards the end of last year. And that dropped from 11,000, split evenly between those two wildlife management areas, down to 9,020 for this year, 2025. However, we didn't remove any stocking days. So those two wildlife management areas will still be stocked with quail for the Saturday, Tuesday, and Thursday hunts beginning in early November and extending through to late December.
Okay, Dave, now what does reductions and vis-a-vis the savings, are the quail and pheasant programs, are they sovereign, or are they still in the red?
Well, if you look at just stamp sales, the revenue that comes from selling the quail and pheasant stamps, it's still very much in the red, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the red. The way we're able to make up for that has been with using some wildlife and sport fish restoration funding.
There, yep,
so that's federal dollars. And so we supplement the pheasant program, pheasant and quail program, with that federal funding, which is, you know, how we've been able to keep such a robust program, even when stamp revenues are flat and haven't been increasing. So that's how we do it. But yeah, based on just stamp sales, this program is very much in the red, but we're able to pull in other funding to keep it going.
You know, you hear the question on occasion, I get this from out-of-staters, guys that say, well, why don't you just, call a fishing game? Why doesn't fishing game just raise the price of the stamp? In Jersey, it ain't that easy. Dave, we got a couple of minutes left. Can you go into what's involved with any type of stamp or license increase?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. The reason we can't, we Fish and Wildlife and the council cannot just simply raise license and permits fees is because in New Jersey, it's all in legislation. So that would take an act of the Assembly and the Senate to move legislation to increase the stamp fee in this case, or even any of our license fees. So what seems to happen historically is they get set and then they become stagnant. And now, you know, 25 years later, you have the same cost or fees for permits and stamps.
It's funny, the politicians think nothing raising tax, but when it comes to, well, this is a tax, we don't want to do that, right? And I'll be willing to pay more. Then, for example, your trout program, Mary Mother of God, you know, look at the fresh, look what's coming out of Hackett, that's the stamp, look what's coming out of Hackettstown, the hybrids, the northerns, the muskies, the wallets, the channel, it got great fishing. I'm not complaining, but if license stamps go up, hey man, deal with it, it's pay as you go. I'm happy with it is right now, Golden. Don't get me wrong. But, hey, if it has to go up, it has to go up. But, again, it's just so the pace and trend is just so phlegmatic. And then that technically is a tax increase. The red flags go up.
Yeah, I mean, you're really touching on something that is extremely important, you know, especially right now as we're seeing such big increases in the cost of feed for the trout, let's say.
Oh.
I mean, we stock over 600,000 trout a year, and constituents are paying $10.50 for a trout stamp. I mean, you get 365 days a year you can fish, and just tons of fish from the trout program, Hackettstown, but really so affordable. But, you know, it puts a strain on the agency when we're trying to, you know, make this all work with just, you know, limited or stagnant revenues.
Well, Dave, one last question. I will be seeing you the 26th, yes, at the South Jersey Sportsman's Jamboree. Are you going to be there? You will be there.
I will be there. I'll be there. We'll have a lot of staff there, different tables set up. We'll have our law enforcement there. So it should be a great time. I can't wait to see you, and I hope a lot of your listeners make their way there on the 26th.
It's going to be a super event. Get into that quickly in the next segment. Yeah, and Wade Stein, the president of the Federation, I didn't think he would do it. Golden, he called me the other day and called me out on that funnel cake eating contest. Now, if I told him that I just found out my blood pressure was 485 over 3,000, maybe he might back off. Well, it's pretty close to that. But that's going to be a super event. It's going to highlight the great work the Fish and Wildlife is doing, and the great hunting, fishing opportunities we have here in New Jersey. Yeah, I just finished a piece for the Fisherman Magazine on the muskies, the pickerel around the present. But why you want to go? Everybody loves a road trip. Don't get me wrong. Who doesn't want to go up to the Finger Lakes for the pike or out to Wisconsin for the muskies? We have it right here. Go to Passaic River. Those northern pike will rip your face off. Go to a pack on a green, those muskies will drag you in. Dave, it's all here.
It's all here. It's all here.
Okay,
it's only limited by people's willingness to get outside and go look for it.
We will see you to 26, Golden.
Can't wait. Thanks, Tom.
Take care, brother. Yep. Well, long enough, up against a break. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, a chat with the co-author of a new book that looks at the fight that defined last year's presidential election and the effort to cover up President Biden's declining health. Also, expert tips on managing your beaten-down retirement savings, plus evidence Gen Z has had enough of so-called situationships, and the latest debate in Amish country, are e-bikes an acceptable way to get around? That and more on This Weekend.
This morning at 6 on WPG, Talk Radio 95.5. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's Talk Station.
You're wrapping it up this weekend, April 12th and 13th. Little bit of rain here. Fish are already wet, so get out there. Just a reminder, great event coming up in a couple of weeks, Saturday, April 26th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Dream Park Equestrian Center in Gloucester County, 400 Route 130, South Logan Township. The South Jersey Sportsman's Jamboree. Let's get an update from Tom Weiss, the promoter. Tommy, how's it going? What do you got, man?
Hey, Tom. Good to hear from you. Good. I hope you're going to be at the event.
Oh, come on. Am I going to be at the event? Wade Stein!
Yeah.
Wade Stein! We're talking funnel cake contest. You ain't escaping that one. Okay, T, go. You're loaded with exhibitors, man. What's happening?
All right. Let me go over our seminar schedule.
Okay, great,
so
great.
Know what's happening throughout the day, the different functions. We'll start off with the color guard, and the Boy Scouts will present that. We're going to have a... the president's message, you know, naturally. You know, Wade, he's got to talk.
He's a man.
We're going to have Ron Jones from Redneck Pride doing the predator howling. That'll be at 9:30, 9:50, somewhere around there. We're going to have Lou Gumbale from the National Wild Turkey Federation doing turkey calling. And Lou's one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have Ron Deal. He's going to be introducing how to release untargeted animals
okay.
from public safety captures.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have, After the Hunt, Deer Recovery by Guy and Tony Pentapine. Deer dog recovery. You know, things are so modern today.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be a guy there with the drones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
For recovering deer. But the old way is to use your dogs. And we're going to have guys that are going to do that, and that's going to be Cody Meyer. And one of the biggest events we're going to have there is the Deer Classic. And that's always...
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah. That's the biggest deers in the state of New Jersey for 2024.
Hey, Weiss, every year every year, guys, from friends of mine from out of state, okay, I've lived in many places, those are Jersey deer, those are Jersey deer, those are Jersey deer, and some of them, they come from public land. Those are Jersey deer. So, yeah, we got it made. Listen, it's going to be April 26th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., the Dream Park Equestrian Center in Gloucester County, 400 Route 130, South Logan Township. More on this next week. Tom Weiss, thanks for joining us, man. Listen, great seminars, great demonstrations. It is rolling. One last thing, Tom. You got about another 10 seconds. What do you got?
I really can't believe that you accepted that challenge.
Yeah, man.
The funnel cake contest.
Yeah, that's my blood pressure. I don't know, man.
That man can eat more funnel cake. Than anybody I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but his name doesn't end in a vowel. You get it? You get it, Weiss? Okay, Tommy. A blood pressure be damned. You take care. See you in a few weeks, bro.
God bless you, man.
See ya.
God bless you.
That'll do for this weekend on Rack and Fin Radio. What a wrap. Get out there, man. You got drum. You got shed. You got trout. You got stripers. You got white perch. Go! Go. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.